So how do we find out where the bomb is, Jack? I mean, there are 100 targets in Washington, Russell asked. Governor Russell had kept quiet, knowing when he was out of his depth. But when he did voice his thoughts, it was clear to the president where his concerns lay.
Not just in D.C. We need to find out where the targets are in all these cities. Is it your suggestion, Jack, that there are going to be 9 more attacks like that in Boston?
The president worryingly asked.
Yes, sir, it is.
The room fell silent as the information slowly sank in, and the president, Russell, and Spelling began to realize the scale of what was going on. If Sabina planted all of her bombs in all 10 of the intended targets, the U.S. would be facing an attack on a scale that was unheard of before. September 11th would pale in comparison to this. The president began to do the sums in his head, but stopped short. The possible loss of life was too incredible to even contemplate. Jack broke the silence.
Sir, the one advantage we have is that Sabina Tlaib does not know of Suleiman's death. Her point of contact with Suleiman was through her company, Tlaib Medical Instruments in Geneva. I have the head of Swiss intelligence, Werner Schmidt, covering this, in case she tries to make contact again. It's a long shot, but it's worth a try.
The president understood what Jack was suggesting, but wanted to hear him say it. He wanted Jack to clarify what he was saying.
What are you suggesting exactly, Jack?
Jack paused.
Well, either we can wait and see if she makes contact, or we could instigate some form of contact.
What do you mean, instigate?
Well, we could try to get her to raise her head above the parapet, so to speak. Try and get her to contact Suleiman and put a trace on the call to find her location. Having located her, we need to take her alive.
May I suggest another course of action, sir? Governor Russell interjected. We shut down the cities, Washington, Miami, and all the rest on the list, and declare martial law. We evacuate everyone until we find the bombs.
The president was shocked. The very thought of doing that was impossible. It was unacceptable.
I would strongly advise against that, Mr. President, Jack said. Martial law won't defuse any bombs that have already been planted, and we can't evacuate all of the cities. May I suggest, sir, our best chance is to stop her.
The president stood up and moved to the wall, picking up the corner of the flag that hung there. He smoothed out its creases and let it drop down again. He was considering what Jack had said. As commander-in-chief, it was his decision. But never before had he had to make one on which so many lives depended.
Does anybody else have any other ideas? Because if they do, now's the time to speak out.
The president wasn't expecting anyone to offer any other suggestions. There was a limit to what could be done. But his question carried a greater weight than that. No matter what he decided, he had to be sure that he had all of the White House together on it. There would be no room for anyone to abstain. They were either all with him or not at all. What he couldn't risk was someone leaking to the press if it went bad and saying they were the only oppositional voice. It was his cabinet, and they were all on the same team. But he knew politics didn't always operate like that, and he wanted to make sure there were no outsiders. He waited, but no one spoke up.
Okay, Jack. I want you to follow any leads you have. But an ambush is just too risky. I won't put the American people in jeopardy like that. It's in the Constitution, and it's our job to serve and protect the citizen, and I will not use them as bait.
The president laid out his plans and instructed Jack to head up the investigation. He wanted to wait and see what the file from Switzerland turned up, and Roy informed him that Sabina's photograph had already been circulated to all of the nation's major airports. Above all else, it was agreed that the situation had to be kept under wraps. At that point, the men in the Oval Office were the only people in the United States who knew about Sabina, and the president intended it to be kept that way. If any of it did find its way to the press, it would be obvious where it had come from.
As long as Sabina doesn't know of Suleiman's death, she'll keep to her plan scheduled, sir. With your permission, I'd like my team to focus on the intelligence at hand, Jack said. The president granted permission and agreed the best they could do at that time was to try and find the bombs, and he ordered Jack and Roy to focus their efforts there. Jack agreed and got up to leave the room, but Spelling had not finished. He felt embarrassed by Jack, but rather than listening and seeing what he could do to help, he tried to intervene.
"Mr. President, I believe my office should run this operation. It's why Homeland Security was created, sir. It's our responsibility."
He tried in vain, but the president wasn't interested, choosing to entrust Jack to head the operation, as it was he who had provided all the intelligence thus far. And from there it was decided. Jack would head up the investigation from Washington, supported by Director Spelling.
"Gentlemen, I believe we all agree that the number one priority is to catch this bomber as soon as we can. But first we need to find the bomb she's already planted. I want you all to cooperate on this."
But the president was unceremoniously cut short in his speech. As he stood behind the thick polished oak of the Oval Office desk delegating his orders, a large and thunderous roar tore through the safety and sanctuary of the room that had been home to some of the most powerful men in history. The noise was deafening, and it filled the air until nothing else could be heard. It invaded the room like an assassin, rushing and filling every nook and cranny like a wave of water until it had nowhere else to go and there was no room left. The five men stood immobile in the room, rooted to the spot. But only Jack seemed to know what was going on. When the noise was gone, it lasted for only a couple of seconds, the president stepped to the window behind him and looked out over the Washington skyline. He could see nothing. But when members of the White House staff stepped out of the door at the north end of the West Wing, the origin of the blast was only too clear. Above the buildings on Pennsylvania Avenue, they could see a small plume of dark black smoke begin to rise. It was small at first, gradually climbing into the D.C. skyline. But then it grew, as the fire that fueled it also grew. Within seconds, clouds of intoxicating black smoke were pumped into the air, billowing up as if it was fanned from the ground. It quickly created a cloud that hung heavy over Capitol Hill, and which spread out over the city as the wind picked it up and carried it out in a southerly direction.
"What the hell was that?" the president asked. But in his heart, he knew what it was.
"I hope it's not what I think it is, sir," replied Jack.
"You think it might be the bomber?"
the president proclaimed incredulously. But the cavernous hole of disbelief that stood in the silence created by the explosion answered his question before Jack could. The explosion on the ground was immense, and smoke mushroomed out and drifted southwards over the White House and surrounding government buildings. Cars in the road stopped, and people began to fill the streets, their necks arched as they gazed at the ominous sky above them. The smoke now stretched from Pennsylvania Avenue and shrouded most of the hill in an eerie dark, a dim and apocalyptic half-light that struck at the heart of every American in the city. The wind changed direction, and the smoke clung to the rooftops as it encased the city, and within minutes the top of the Washington Monument had become obscured and invisible from the ground. As the dark cloud swamped the buildings and streets, Jack knew one thing was for sure. The race to stop Sabina and to save the people of America had well and truly begun. Chapter 19. The Oval Office remained shrouded in silence for a few moments as the gravitas of the situation began to dawn on the five men who stood motionless inside. Governor Russell stood aghast as a glazed look of disbelief spread across his face. Moments earlier, he'd been refuting the evidence Jack had put forward, disbelieving of what had seemed to him to be a preposterous origin for the Boston explosion. But now, his reluctance had been shot down in front of him in the worst possible way. When Sabina had attacked the first time, the potency of the blast and the scale of the carnage it caused had been overshadowed by its sheer unexpectedness. Its immediate effect was an outpouring of panic and incredulity. But this time, the explosion tore at the very heart and soul of America. It had struck the capital city of the United States, the home of government and residence to the country's leaders. The bomb itself had detonated only a matter of blocks away from the president himself, and it was clear for all to see that whoever had been responsible for the first bomb was responsible for this. Moreover, it was now impossible to ignore the intent. It was a personal and direct attack on the American people, designed to kill and to terrorize. And this second explosion had achieved just that. Suddenly, the deathly silence of the Oval Office was sliced open as Jack's cell phone began to ring.
"Excuse me, sir. I think I should take this call."
"Go ahead," replied the president. Jack snapped open his cell phone.
"Jack, reports are coming in that there's been an enormous explosion on Pennsylvania Avenue in Washington."
"I know, Don. I'm at the White House now with the president. We heard it."
"Oh, Jesus, Jack. We haven't got any info yet, but initial reports aren't good. The potential loss of life is huge."
Don detailed as much information as he had at that time, but specifics were limited, and there was nothing he could tell Jack that he didn't already know.
"Thanks, Don. I'll get back to you." And he ended the call.
"Mr. President, there's been an explosion at a bank on Pennsylvania Avenue. With your permission, I'd like to get over there, sir." His voice was calm, but everyone in the room could detect the underlying sense of dread, if only because they were feeling it themselves. The president paused, uncharacteristically shaken and unsure what to say. Within a moment, though, he'd composed himself, and he'd turned to the situation at hand, instructing Jack to get down to the bomb site and to report back directly to Governor Russell, who would relay it back to him. Jack was in charge of all operations in the field, above all other government agencies. In a matter of seconds, Jack was on his way out of the room, moving with a purpose that neither Governor Russell nor Director Spelling could seem to muster. And once the four men were outside the Oval Office, he began to organize what he wanted done.
"Right. I want each of you to tell your men that I'm in command on this operation," he said, talking directly to Russell and Spelling. "We gotta move swiftly on this, and we gotta move now, and I don't want any shit from your people." End of Disc 4.